This is Michael Morris, and with Mira Adja, we, with Burton Blatt Institute at Syracuse University, are going to facilitate the discussion today. Let me, before we get going, we have a wonderful list of presenters today and a lot of opportunity for interaction and discussion. This is, of course, the Pathways to Careers Community of Practice, services to support those with significant disabilities and family engagement that is bringing us all to this call today. Let's make sure we know who's with us. So let me attempt a roll call. Let me start with the four vocational rehabilitation projects that are being funded by RSA. Can you share with me who has joined from the Georgia project?
This is Rita Young. We have a team of about nine from the E3 unit that are all participating today.
Okay, great. Thank you. How about Kentucky?
Hello, this is Helga Gilbert, and it's just me today.
Okay, thank you, Helga. Nebraska? Anyone? Not yet, okay. And how about Virginia Project? No, not yet, okay. We also have invited and have had participation in the past from some of the Disability Employment Initiative TA team, and that's a project funded by the Employment and Training Administration at Department of Labor. Has any DEI TA folks joined us today?
David Mayer.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good, Michael. Nice and warm.
Yeah, that's what you get for where you live in California.
Right.
Okay. And how about any DEI project join? No? Okay. And, of course, I suspect we have a fairly robust team joining us with the Onondaga Community College project. Anyone
here
to speak on behalf of the group? I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Nancy and Megan are here.
Oh, Nancy and Megan, great, great, thank you. And did anyone join from the other project funded by Office of Disability Employment Policy, ODEP, the Department of Labor from the state of Tennessee, by any chance? Did anyone come on?
Okay. Hi, this is Janet with ODEP. Pellissippi State Community College is not able to join us today.
Okay, okay. Anyone else from ODEP want to announce themselves if they have joined? No? Okay. Well,
we check on Virginia.
Virginia. Who joined?
Do we have Virginia?
Oh, do we have Virginia? I asked about Virginia.
We do have Nebraska, though.
Okay.
Zach
okay.
is on the line.
Okay. Okay, great. All right. Okay. Well, we've got quite a lineup of presenters today. The first presenter is Rebecca Salon. And Celestia, are you going to move slides for us?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Just tell me, next slide, please, and announce the slide number.
Okay. Next slide, please. Yeah. Next slide, please. Nope. Nothing moving for me. Are slides moving?
We are on slide number five.
They are.
Does everyone see slide number five?
Yes, we do.
I do.
Okay. Well, let me introduce you to Rebecca Salon. Rebecca has many years of experience in different federally funded projects. She is a recent appointee to the President's Committee for People with Intellectual Disabilities. She's currently the project director for the National Center on Leadership for Employment and Advancement of People with Disabilities, called the LEAD Center. And she also works at the District of Columbia, DC's Department on Disability Services, where she is the lead for the DC Employment First Program initiatives. Prior to all of this work, she was for quite a number of years the executive director of the Lieutenant Joseph Kennedy Institute. She earned her doctoral degree in special ed with studies and research geared towards disability policy from Syracuse University. So I'm going to turn it over to Rebecca. We asked her to share a little bit with us about the LEAD Center, but then move on to talk about the questions that come up in our last call about working with people with more significant disabilities. Could we provide any tips and strategies? And Rebecca is certainly an outstanding expert to share some of her knowledge from years of experience. So Rebecca, I turn to you.
No, thanks so much. I appreciate being invited. For those of you who don't know about the LEAD Center, we're the National Center on Leadership for the Employment and Economic Advancement of People with Disabilities, and we're a collaborative of disability workforce and economic empowerment organizations led by National Disability Institute and funded by the Office of Disability Employment Policy at the Department of Labor. And our mission is to advance both sustainable individual and systems level change that results in improved competitive integrated employment and economic self-sufficiency outcomes for people across the spectrum of disabilities. And if you're not on our mailing list, you know, I would encourage you to go to leadcenter.org and sign up. So I wanted to talk a little about some of the projects that LEAD Center has been doing that specifically focus on people with the most significant disabilities, but also have great promise for engaging families. One of the initiatives that we've been working on for the past several years has been to introduce customized employment into the workforce system as a universal design, and ODEP and the Department of Labor would like to see customized employment, which was really developed for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and has since been expanded to people with any disabilities, but they would like to see it really used as a universal design because it has such promise in the workforce system in general for anyone who faces barriers to employment to be successful. And I assume that you all know what customized employment is, but it's a process that personalizes the employment relationship between a job candidate and an employer in a way that meets the needs of both. So it matches people based on their strengths and the conditions of employment that would make them most successful and their interests with the needs of the business so that it creates a win-win situation for both the person and the employer. Seem to have lost the slide. Is the slide still showing on your screens? Mine just went blank. There we are. Thanks. Can we just go back for? I was looking for the other slide. But some of the things that we've been doing is to pilot something called guided group discovery in American job centers with partners. So we've included community colleges, we've included vocational rehabilitation, DD agencies, Centers for Independent Living, community rehab providers, the homeless service system. And what the process does is to enable people to really focus on what they bring to an employment situation, what unique contributions they could make to an employer, and looking very broadly into what their experiences have been, not just work experiences. And it's a great way to engage families. So the process happens over a number of weeks, and enables people to engage both the families and people in their support network in identifying what their strengths are, when are they at their best, what are the things that they never tire of doing. And that translates into a job development plan where people can really look at what employer needs, what they have to offer. We also have been piloting self-guided discovery, which is really a similar process but designed for people who are a bit more capable of overseeing the discovery process themselves. So what happens in most disability systems is really one-on-one facilitated discovery. What we've designed are things that could happen in groups or things that that can happen in a self-guided way, but both really lend themselves to engaging families and making families part of the solution. As we all know, most people get their jobs through the people that they know. So finding ways to engage families in the process and their networks greatly enhances the ability of someone to get a job. On the next slide, I just did a screenshot of the LEAD Center website. If you're interested in more information about customized employment, there's a link on the homepage. And we worked with Mark Golden Associates, Griffin Hammes and Associates, and Transcend to develop our materials. So we kind of took the best of what those three organizations have to offer, given that they're all leaders in customized employment. So we have their favorite resources there. They were instrumental in the design of our products. And over the next couple months, we'll be posting a facilitator's manual, both for guided group discovery and self-guided discovery, so you will have access to that. The other thing I wanted to mention is that the University of Missouri, Kansas City has developed a life course framework as part of a national supporting families community of practice that they are facilitating in a number of states. And they focus on supporting families rather than family support. That family support is a program. Supporting families really engages families at a different level. And the thing that I like about the life course framework is that it really does look much more broadly into the ways in which people can be supported to get a job and to have a good life. So I very briefly wanted to just show you some of the tools and mention the ways that they're being used. So I'm going to talk about a trajectory that they've developed that helps people develop a vision for themselves, what they envision for a good life, and as a way to determine employment goals. They use an integrated support star to identify supports beyond what can be available in the public system. And they all engage the person, their family, and anyone in their support network in the process. So I hope that you all had a chance to see the links that Mira sent out, because this is way too small for anyone to see. But this is a picture of the trajectory tool. And if you did open it up on your computer or print it out, what I sent was one that was for an individual and another for a family. But what this does is really let people identify what their vision is for a good life for themselves and for their family, and also what they want to make sure doesn't happen as part of that process. But it gives people, kind of a North Star to be looking at as they're setting goals, either for employment or for independent living or anything else in their life. So it's kind of simple and something that can be used across the lifespan, but very much useful for people who are in transition, young people, people who are, engaged in their job search process. And it's linked to this integrated support star. And again, I hope you were able to open up the link that Mira sent. But what the support star does is allow you to put the person in the middle, to put their employment goal, as this one has, in the middle, to put a family in the middle, and then to look at their situation in terms of their personal strengths and assets. In this case, for employment, it looks, it notes that they have a lot of responsibilities at home and school, that they can use an alarm to get to where they need to be on time. They know how to use public transportation. They've had summer jobs. They have a debit card, those kinds of things. So it looks at strengths and assets. It looks at relationship-based supports, so the kinds of things that could happen that could support an employment goal, like job shadowing a family member, engaging neighbors, being part of a carpool, those kinds of things. It looks at ways in which technology can support them. And for many people, that there are increasingly, you know, ways that readily available technology can help people get and keep jobs. So being, you know, really specific about that, ways in which their community can support them. So things like visiting businesses, attending colleges or technical schools, participating in career days. And only after you've looked at all of those other things do you look at eligibility supports. I think for most people with disabilities and their families, they immediately go to the public systems and ask the question, what am I eligible for? And what this does is reframe the conversation so that nobody wants to have all their needs met by a public system, and there aren't enough resources for that to happen in any case. So what this does is to, you know, reframe the conversation so that you have an opportunity to think of all of the other ways that someone's employment goal can be supported in addition to vocational rehabilitation and the DD system and independent living centers and those kinds of things. So it's kind of a simple, elegant way of thinking about it. And the links that Mira sent out, if you go to any of those links, there are enormous amounts of resources and training programs. I also sent attached to this, and it's another link, is they're charting the frame of the life course chart that looks at, and if, again, you can't see the prints, but it looks at daily life and employment, community living, someone's social and spiritual support, healthy living, security, safety, citizenship advocacy, and a whole bunch of areas. And again, it allows you to capture what in those areas are personal strengths and assets that someone brings, what relationship-based supports might be available to support them in any of those life areas, how technology can support them, what community resources might be available, and what eligibility-based supports can be available, all related to that trajectory, you know, so that people have identified their, you know, their North Star, what their vision is for their life, and they set goals based on that, and then this supports it. And our experience in using it and the experience of the University of Missouri Kansas City people are that it gets families involved in really positive ways. It enables them to set higher expectations, to be engaged in the process, to open up their networks to support their son or daughter with a disability. So it puts them in the center of the conversation with their family member with a disability. And I think people ultimately are surprised at how much information they're able to contribute as they start thinking of all the ways that people can be supported and the integration of services and supports. So it's just, I really like the fact that it's an integrated way of looking at things. And I know people have used it, you know, for many different types of planning processes. And as I said on the integrated support store, you can put almost anything in the center there. You know, this one was developed with an employment goal, but it can be almost anything that you might be planning for to enable you to look at these different domains and different ways to integrate support. So there was a lot more, you know, information on charting the life course. And we have a extensive collection of information on customized employment and ways that we've been using Discovery to support people in any one of the systems, including the workforce system, and all of the approaches that we use are done in partnership and as appropriate with family support. So we just included a slide for all the ways that you can connect with the LEAD Center, I think that was all I had. Thank you again for inviting me.
Rebecca, this is Michael,
yes.
And let me open it up to the others from the other projects, whether they you have a few minutes for questions.
Sure.
And I have one or two, but let me turn to the audience first. Anyone with a question for Rebecca in terms of how you might perhaps apply some of these tools related to your own project? Anyone with a question?
Hi, Rebecca. This is Janet from ODEP. And
hi, Janet.
This looks like a really great tool. And one of the things we're doing right now is revising the guideposts for success. And I'd like to include information on planning processes like this that are strengths-based and inclusive of family and individual networks and goals. Do you know if there has been any scholarly write-up on this or evidence base that this integrated services and support and is noted in the research literature? I mean, I know it's based on evidence, but I just was wondering if you could point me in a direction that you think might be a good article.
Yeah, no, thanks, Janet. And I do think it aligns nicely with the guideposts.
Yes.
A lot of what the guideposts look at. And I see someone else asked a question about if there's any outcome data related to the process. I can find that out. I mean, I know that they've written extensively about the work that they're doing in six states. And I think they're in year three of providing technical assistance. They've been working in Missouri that much longer because that's where they developed it. So I know that they have been, kind of capturing the process and especially, being able to capture what ways in which families have been engaged and because it's across the lifespan, so in the services for their son or daughter at all ages. They're not only focused on employment, but I can try and find that out. I know that they have written quite a bit, so I can see if I can connect you with someone who can give you a more definitive answer about that.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Anybody else? Okay. Well, let's leave Rebecca here at this point, and let me turn next to Nancy and Megan to talk a little bit about some of the barriers to success, family engagement, and ongoing outreach through the OCC project. Nancy,
we're
Megan?
Here. So, thank you for focusing on employment, but we wanted to remind folks that we're talking now about families and students as we engage them as they begin and continue their educational services in a two-year community college setting. Megan?
Next slide, please.
So these are some strategies that we've used to sort of help to engage the families of our students. We have family advocacy organizations. We do have a recruiter that we work with who works a lot with our Special Education Parent Teacher Association. OPC Scholars is for high school seniors who have disabilities and would like to have some information about what it's like to go into college. They also, our parents of our students are receiving a family newsletter about the events and achievements of their students. And we've also had a family survey of some of our OPC students that unfortunately we don't have very much data on yet.
Megan's done a nice job keeping parents informed by recently starting a family newsletter. And connected to that and our work with Janet and others on our team in DC, we recently sent out a survey to parents as well of our students to gather data on their reaction to their young college student, their reaction to the transition to college, their reaction to the shift from special education in the K through 12 system and the changes in the college support. So we plan to keep that up and probably do it every semester as the student hopefully finishes and maybe enters employment. So through the life of this project, we hope to have several phases of information that might add helpful information down the road. Next slide.
So these are the issues that we are most commonly seeing. And first, you can see on the left is access to basic needs. We see clothing, housing, food, even heat and hot water as barriers to success for our students, because obviously if they're hungry and they have no place to go, that's going to be first thing on their list, and they're not necessarily worried about their classes. Actually, there was a study recently, beginning of December, that said approximately one-third of community college students experience the threat of homelessness and housing instability, and 12% face the threat of hunger. We don't have the statistics specifically for students with disabilities, but I can imagine that that number would probably be a bit higher. Some other examples of issues that we encounter are mental health needs or complications, access to proper health care. In the Syracuse area, we just have sort of a shortage of mental health care specialists. Some of our students have suicidal ideations. And then there's some sort of more common issues, family problems, that sort of runs the gamut, issues communicating with professors, advising for classes, relationship issues, understanding the difference between high school and college, which that really is for both the parents and students, and there's also transportation issues.
It's important to note that Syracuse has one of the highest poverty rates in the nation for people who are Hispanic or Black. And so it's not surprising to me that in the parent survey, especially for our brand new first semester freshman students, the parents were used to receiving services like special transportation, PT, OT, and mental health services, and even some additional services beyond that through the IEP process, and that was all arranged for them in the K through 12 environment. So given the independence model of college, some of the families and our students are struggling to have these needed services, but somehow arrange them independently. That's a common issue that parents report feeling frustration with. Next slide.
So these are just some of the referrals that we have had to make. I see that somebody's saying that they can hear voices in the background. I don't think that's here. So we have a few different places here. Now these are just a few that has happened recently. So first, CPEP, which is the Comprehensive Emergency Psychiatric Program, and those are services at St. Joseph's Hospital. Is everybody hearing us okay now?
Try to speak up, if you can, even a little bit louder.
Every time I turn the mic up, we get this echo. So yeah. That's sort of the issue that we're having right now. Let's see. Is that better? Okay. So just let us know if you hear some feedback or anything like that. So again, Comprehensive Emergency Psychiatric Program at St. Joseph's. These were referrals that, this is Megan, that I made. I believe Nancy had to make some referrals to this program rather recently. I think one or two students.
Yes, we have a We Care committee on campus. That's the behavioral intervention team that many colleges use now as a way of learning early on about students who are struggling. And that committee also meets every Tuesday and gets many referrals from the entire campus. And then they're assigned a case manager individually to follow up and manage some of these referrals as well.
So we also, we work with AccessVR, which is New York's vocational rehab services, and they're a partner to our project. So we refer all of our students at usually more than one point until they have a caseworker. So four referrals were given out halfway through the semester. So that is an ongoing need. We do have a food pantry on campus that we're really lucky to have. And we had three referrals given to two students, and I believe that there are likely more students out there who, you know, perhaps didn't share the fact that they didn't have any food at home or that they were hungry. So there could likely be more. Advocates Incorporated is a service that we work with to help find an aid when it's appropriate. Luckily, we had no referrals in our last quarter, but that is something we partner with them very closely. I just see a question, how many students are in your program? Does your program have a limited capacity? Right now, we have somewhere around 50 students that we're working with. We're working towards a higher number, so we have not reached any kind of capacity right now. But I hope I can answer some of this a little bit later on, too. Centro is our bus system here. We offer bus passes to our students. They were given out to 11 students. Unfortunately, we have actually just recently been working with our financial aid department here, and we may not even be able to give those out anymore. So that could be an issue. The Learning Center on campus, that is where students can get tutoring. And there's quite a few referrals, as you can see, made to them. And all students are referred to them multiple times throughout the semester.
So as you see, Megan's role has had to expand beyond her originally envisioned job responsibilities of educational coordinator. It's sort of Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you recall that before she can even deal with the educational issues our students face, she must deal with these very common foundational issues, or we won't be able to retain the student. So it seems that food and housing scarcity issues are becoming more common in the community college campuses, and Celestia was able to add on your website later under the resource list two recent studies, one about food and housing scarcity and another one about a new service that we've just started using that we hope is going to help us with this issue, Single Stop. So if you have time later and you click on the resources from this community of practice, you'll see there's a free downloadable e-text on single stop. So Megan's role now is dealing with our food pantry, is referring students for housing. The single stop is just getting up and running here. That's going to be a way for students to check their eligibility for such resources as food stamps, Medicaid, housing, Title 8 housing, and other resources beyond the scope of OCC. And then we have a brand new federally funded community care hub that also links students with some local not-for-profits that will be having a presence right here at OCC. Again, to hopefully retain the student at the point they're struggling with a barrier, either on or off campus. And then just this week, we made a wonderful contact with a landlord in Syracuse that owns 56 properties and wants to rent his fully furnished apartments to college students. So we're feeling like our outreach efforts are going to be improved for the spring. But nevertheless, this has somewhat changed Megan's role in terms of her focus with students. Next slide, please.
So we have been keeping track of what we're calling advisement meetings. So this is something that is newly being tracked. So the meetings themselves can range from 30 minutes to over an hour. It really is dependent upon the student issue. And most often what happens is there's a discussion of available resources, an outline of how to handle challenges, and planning next meeting and next steps. I think it's important to note that a lot of our students have an intersection of issues, which always includes disability, but there's many others, such as poverty, being a member of a minority group, hunger, etc. And I'll actually go into this a little bit more on the next slide, please. This is something that we see sort of overall over the college. So our students have a combination of disabilities and other challenges, which we've already discussed quite a bit, homelessness and hunger, poverty as well. Like Nancy said, Syracuse is one of the poorest places in the nation. So it's often also combined with other inequalities that are based in identity, like gender, race, and ethnicity. Next slide, please. These are some other statistics that we've found that are specific to students with disabilities. It's interesting to note that the enrollment has increased significantly over the last few decades. However, the completion rate is at 16%, so it's actually quite low. The National Center for Education Statistics, again, they completed a survey in 2002 with a lot of high school sophomores, and 13 years later, they also followed up with them. And I think this is also important to note that the students in the lowest quartile who had parents with the lowest income, education, and worked unskilled jobs, they showed that of the 58% that wanted to originally get a bachelor's degree, only 14% did so. Is the audio better? I've been trying to play with it a little bit.
You're getting softer and softer.
Okay, well, hopefully, I think we're just going to try and wrap up our piece
all right.
Pretty quick here, because I'm not sure exactly what the problem is.
You're much clearer
so
now.
We'll just, if we can get through the rest of this here, and then we can hopefully answer just a few questions. So next slide, please. So these are just some questions that we generally have, you know, in trying to figure out what sort of resources and what sort of help we can provide. So with our students, they have a disability plus other challenges. How are we able to remove the barriers and best help them prepare for their life after college? And while they're facing these hardships at OCC, if they're unable to rectify these and move past those barriers, how can we prepare them for employment and careers?
This is Nancy. We do have two students who are slated to graduate in May of 17, and both of them will be taking internships this coming so-called spring semester, which begins in January. And we're finding that interesting as well, because neither of these two students drive. So even though we were able to set up transportation for them to get to college, now some of the barriers that existed are raising themselves as we face the employment phase as well. So this will be our first efforts moving our students out into the workforce on this project. And so we'll start to keep some of the same pieces of information that we have while they've been here pursuing their degree.
Next slide, please. Some other questions. Our students face very serious challenges in college and beyond. We've went through what they can be. We're here to act as a resource for our students, but what can we do to prepare them for life after OCC? And essentially, what happens when referrals aren't enough? You know, this is a difficult job to have, and a lot of the time we do feel a sort of responsibility for our students. So if we can help a student remove barriers but they're not entirely prepared for a career when they leave OCC, we've thought, you know, can we consider our program successful and in what ways? Next slide, please. So these next few slides are really sort of testimonials. Pieces from students, things that they've shared with me and things that we've discovered about some of our students. So this first student, who we'll call John, he uses public transportation. He is a bit older, I believe, 22. He's a first-generation college student. He has made quite a connection with me, and he likes to come in and say hello. He likes to come in and talk about classes, tutoring, jobs, really it's a lot of different things. He's constantly looking for jobs, and I say that meaning not as in careers. He lives with his parents. His father doesn't work, and his mother works a part-time job. He is struggling because he's constantly worried that, according to him, his lights will get turned off. And he spends really all of his free time looking for jobs to help pay for basic needs, and that often can affect, you know, getting his homework done and doing things that he needs to do for school. Next slide, please. Another student that we work closely with, we'll call him Steve. He's missed quite a few meetings due to transportation issues, court dates, other issues. He has a criminal record, and he has a very real concern that he won't be able to find a job after completing his degree. So a lot of the time he has these very strong feelings that he would like to drop out and just go back and get a job, again, not a career. He began the semester with no transportation, and he was living in a shelter. He was able to, through some of our resources and referrals, get a one-bedroom apartment and help with a car, but that has required him to take out loans to get those, and he's also worried that he won't be able to pay them back, which is also a very sort of real thing for him to deal with on a daily basis. So he also has mental health issues, so that can affect him coming to class. His transportation problems, although they've been fixed now, he has come in and shared, you know, he can have issues with his car that he doesn't have the money to fix. So there are still the issues, even though he has improved over the course of the semester. Next slide, please. This is our last student, and this one is somebody that I work with almost on a daily basis. So he has a number of challenges, extreme poverty, mental illness within his family. As I said, he comes to see me almost every day with just information about how he's doing. He often wears his gym clothes for days or more at a time, and he has extremely poor personal hygiene. I think probably everybody knows it's one of those really hard conversations to have, a conversation about hygiene, but after having that conversation with him multiple times, it still hasn't improved. He often shares that he has no food, and he's visited the food pantry a few times. He sent an email to his teachers in the past that he passed out and couldn't attend class. It was likely due to hunger. And one of the last times we spoke, he shared that he was allowed one sandwich to eat over the weekend, and that was it. So this student also said, I'm sorry, but that's what we've got here. This student also said that in his home, he couldn't sleep because he was being bitten by fleas. So they're just an overwhelming, there are overwhelming things that are working against him being successful in school. And that really did show this semester, because I know of his four classes, he had to drop one. And I know for a fact that he failed two of them. Next slide, please. So this is essentially what I just said. His family has severe financial trouble as well, and he's very exhausted because of that. Next slide, please. So now we're going to be open to questions, and hopefully our mic will cooperate.
Yeah, let me break in the interest of time. You've laid out such a wonderful set of personal profiles, you know, individual examples of this range of issues that are outside the skills development, you know, focus. Let's just hold on this so that we can get some time in for the Georgia project. And I would suggest that on our next call, we can take back up some of the challenges that you've raised. So let me thank you for presenting and really opening up a whole range of issues for discussion. But let's go to the Georgia project. And Lori, are you going to lead? Lori
is unavailable. She's not available today. She had a scheduling conflict. This is Rita Young.
Oh, okay. Rita, are you going to take the lead then?
That's fine, sure.
Okay. And you, so we'll move slides for
okay.
You.
You can move the slide.
Why don't we go to
there's
the
a bit of an echo, so it's a little distracting. I may move off to the side here. I'm in a room of about 10 folks. I'm still here. Can everyone hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So E3, we have a unique approach to family engagement. One of our strategic partners is Parent to Parent of Georgia, and we've hired transition partners that actually work in the school districts in collaboration with the school districts, with the local VR counselors, and with our career pathway specialists to reach families. So we currently have a parent engagement plan that we just approved, and each district will have their own parent engagement plan. We'll give them a list of activities, and they'll select those activities as a part of what will be most useful to their community. So our transition partners
We'll work to build relationships and improve the transition process. Again, we'll work collaboratively with the school personnel and practice effective listening skills and provide responses and options that are family-centered. You can move to the next slide. In terms of outreach, we've had several, and we anticipate having several events in each district, specifically around the open houses that each school district has as one point of contact. We really want the parent transition partners to provide that one-on-one consultation and assistance. So that'll be something, again, that's quite unique. They will actually sit down and talk to the family about their particular situation and provide resources depending upon the needs of the family. Already in several of our districts, the transition partners are partnering with the districts on their on existing events. So we have promotional information or materials rather from parent to parent and also from E3 and GVRA. We also are looking at a series of three trainings that the transition partner will put on starting in January. Examples of those trainings would be a transition to from pediatric healthcare to adult healthcare. That is certainly a large, a huge jump and leap for our individuals who have medical concerns. We also will be providing training on Medicaid waivers. We're hearing that that is an emerging need or an existing need in each of the districts. We also, if you look on the Parent to Parent of Georgia website, there they have a special area specifically for employment. So what you can do is actually search their database for potential providers. So it's a very valuable resource for families. Next slide. Talked a little bit about the database, the parent-to-parent database, their roadmap of services. There are also, again, the last point in terms of real-time advice, technical assistance, we're looking at ways to partner with local VR offices to provide consultation time on-site for parents who need it. You can go to the next slide. Another feature of the parent engagement plan is supporting parents who can share experiences specifically around transition. So parent to parent will recruit volunteers in each of our districts as another way to support those parents. They'll start local or topical support groups either in person or online. And in Georgia, we have what's called parent mentors that are employees of each school district or most of the school districts in Georgia that are the liaison between the school and families, and they work, our parent transition partners work in collaboration with the parent mentors. This is a part of our parent engagement plan. So as you see, I mentioned earlier about the transition to healthcare, now in comp waivers. Webinars on benefits navigation, we find that that is another obstacle for parents is education on the benefits. Once their children begin employment, they have great concerns that they will lose benefits and insurance. Can we go to the next slide? We can move to the next slide.
Okay. We're thank you, Rita. We're almost out of time here. I think your presentation and and the presentation from OCC really expand the scope of really what's essentially a circle of support, family, other resources, community resources, relationships with other community organizations and other public agencies, that it's not just the skills. If we only focus on the skills, the student participation is eventually going to erode because of these other barriers to success. And I think it would be extraordinary to take, I know we have always kind of come back to, well, let's consider a new topic. I think there's a lot here worth discussing on our next call, which the meeting schedules every 2 months, the fourth Thursday of the month with, from 12 to 1, which would place our next call being February 23rd, 2016, noon Eastern Standard Time. And I my opinion would be is we should stay with this topic and come back to discuss some of the individual examples that Onondaga Community College has shared with us. And I bet each of you might be, could also think of very specific examples of this array of needs that unless we address them, whether it's family engagement or it's other types of supports that are going to make this individual student succeed, we're all not going to succeed. But I'm interested, I think we have two more minutes roughly. Anyone with your own thoughts? Do you feel like I do that there's a lot that has just been presented to think about and to keep that focus going for the next meeting?
Anyone this is Helga. Comments? I totally agree. I think it's those intensive support services that is, well, for Voc Rehab and Office for the Blind, where we need to make sure that we're focusing on whenever we enroll someone in training or education, and something I think about a lot. So I would love to keep talking about it.
Stay with it. Stay with it. Thank you. Anybody else?
I just wanted to comment. I really enjoyed the discussion today. This is Janet Odep, and I think that both of the models talked about sort of a family strengths or youth and family-centric approach, and that as we discuss next time, looking really carefully at strengths and how we use strengths in our networks to address ongoing needs as perhaps a strategy.
Right.
As well as you know, working with, as Nancy mentioned, the One Stop and different programs.
Yeah. I mean, this requires coordination at the highest level, because it's not at a first level, it's identifying where might some of these support needs be provided, but then the coordination of that and the coordination between the educational institution, other types of community resources, the One Stop, that's a lot of work. And both Georgia and OCC have really, broadened the framework here far beyond that I think I had been thinking about. I certainly thought about some of these issues, but for example, the individual who he doesn't have enough food to make it through the weekend, let alone how is he going to have any energy to continue his studies. So pretty significant. Okay, I think we've hit overtime. Gosh, that went fast. Let me thank all our presenters, Rebecca, presenters from OCC, and Rita from Georgia. I think this is a lot of really strong material presented, and we will do a follow-up, but we will be meeting again on February 23rd, and I think we will put forward some questions in the interim about really how to focus this discussion, which really I would say dedicate the next hour in February to discussion, because we really set this up with the presentations today. So thanks, everyone, and happy holidays, and we will be with you on February 23rd, 2016. Thanks so much. Take care.